And our topic this morning is from Rays of the One Light. It's a very beautiful one and very universal. Truth invites, it never commands. Truth is one and eternal. Realize oneness with it in your deathless self within. The following commentary is based on the teachings of Paramhansa Yogananda. Free will is a basic principle of life. God never coerces. He invites us to live in such a way that we find fulfillment in ourselves. If we refuse to live rightly, Paramahansa Yogananda taught, God simply says, I will wait. We have eternity to live. In that eternity, we live as we choose, in self-created darkness, a darkness as intense and as long-lasting as we choose, or in the infinite light, the true self, which is God. Jesus Christ in the Beatitudes offered a beautiful example of God's way of inviting mankind to seek perfection, not by commanding, but by offering his human children the incentive they need to choose the right of their own volition. Blessed are the poor in spirit, Jesus said, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. In each of the Beatitudes, Jesus explains the blessing attendant upon observing it. The divine way, similarly, for each of us, is not to do violence to our own natures. Spirituality must be attained naturally. It can never be attained by force. The Bhagavad Gita says in the third chapter, even the wise behave in accordance with nature as it is manifested in them. Of what avail then is suppression? The scripture then goes on, however, to explain that this doesn't mean we should surrender to the dictates of our lower nature. Rather, it emphasizes our need to aspire to the heights, but each of us in accordance with his own nature and not in imitation of anyone else's, offering ourselves up for purification by divine grace. Desire, whatever form it takes, so the Bhagavad Gita explains, should be resisted, even if only mentally. Attachment and repulsion to sense objects, it says, both of these are universally rooted. No one should accept their influence, for verily they are man's enemies. Thus, through Holy Scripture, God has spoken to mankind. Om, om, om.
Good morning, everyone. I'll start with a reading from Whispers from Eternity. These beautiful prayer demands of Master. This is, teach me to drown in thy light and love. I come to thee with the song of my smiles. Whatever treasures I have lain in the secrecy of my soul, I bring eagerly to thee. I bring thee all the honey from the hive of my heart, all that was ever mine, is now thine alone. The sunlight of this world, shining upon my eager hopes and brief, fickle fulfillments, burned me repeatedly with dissatisfaction. Now I will quench my thirst forever in thy radiant waters. The taper of my aspiration toward happiness will burst aflame with thy coming into a conflagration of bliss. In thy vast, enchanting sea of light, I will swim joyfully forever. Teach me to drown in thee and live, rather than live in a mirage paradise of earthliness and die. Well, this is a very, very interesting and important topic today, that God never coerces us toward him. Rather, it is a play of free will. That interplay of free will and karma and worldliness and all of the enormous complication that results from it is a very, very interesting way to run a universe. I remember thinking, I can't remember what keyed it off, but remember thinking a few years ago, something had happened in the world. I don't think it was, this is the anniversary of 9/11, where the terrible terrorist attack killed so many thousands of people. I don't think it was that. I think it was some smaller tragedy, but a tragedy nonetheless. I remember thinking, God, why do you allow such things to happen in the world? At least, I mean, okay, free will, that's one thing, but couldn't you kind of narrow the parameters of how that free will can be used? And indeed, he does. It's just that we haven't chosen to incarnate on a planet where the parameters are narrowed. We, for our karma, for our growth, for whatever the reasons, have chosen to incarnate on this planet at this time, where the parameters for good and evil seem pretty wide. We have great, great saints, and then we have a lot of darkness. We're, strangely enough, kind of in the middle of it all. There are many, many planets, even galaxies, that are lower, darker in consciousness. And there are planets and galaxies that are higher in consciousness. Very, very high ones. You would think, well, there's no problem there. If it's really high, everything is wonderful. But remember in the autobiography, Master said that Sri Yukteswar was talking about people who are on the astral planet Hiranyaloka. Now, the entry fee to get onto Hiranyaloka is Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Nirvikalpa Samadhi is higher than almost all of the great saints that you hear about in our world. So extremely high planet. But still on that planet, Sri Yukteswar said that the inhabitants of that planet feel great pain. They feel great pain. Why? Because they misperceive some element of truth. Just that tiny, tiny misperception of truth causes great pain when you're sensitive enough, when you're in tune enough. And so always, always there is, it's as if we're floating in a vast sea. In fact, Swami used this illustration and very, very powerfully in his book, Education for Life. He used the image of specific gravity. Specific gravity is where you float in a body of water. It's not the exact scientific definition of it, but it's the image that we want to use. That think of floating in the sea, and your specific gravity has you at a certain level in the depths of the sea. If you had a heavier specific gravity, meaning that you're more influenced by a downward pull of gravity, then you would sink lower in that sea. And if you had a higher specific gravity, you would rise in that sea. But the image here is very important, because for us, what is central is that we're always at some level, and there's a level ahead of us, above us, and there's a level beneath us. And for today's topic, God does not force us to rise. He does not compel us. We make a choice, and by the choice that we make, by thousands and thousands of choices that we make, we change our specific gravity. And when we change the specific gravity, we naturally rise. Now, ultimately, our specific gravity is completely light. We're children of light. And so ultimately, we're meant to rise into not just to the surface of the sea, but into the skies of infinity. That's our innate nature. But we're waterlogged. We're waterlogged by past experiences, by desires, by likes and dislikes. And so we don't necessarily float at the height that we want to. So there, it's almost like wherever, it's all about consciousness. That's why repression doesn't work. Repressing our own nature, or trying to repress the behavior of others, does not work. Yes, it can work for a short time, but ultimately, unless there is a change of consciousness, unless that change of consciousness brings about a change in our specific gravity, it does not work for very long to try to, well, in this case, to try to buoy ourselves up by swimming really fast when our specific gravity is trying to pull us down. That's why suppression doesn't work. It's kind of the suppression we think of pushing down here. I'm using a reverse of that image, but you understand the point that I'm getting at. Suppression does not work unless we change consciousness. But does that mean that we're stuck? We're stuck with whatever specific gravity we have. And we don't have just one specific gravity. We have multiples of specific gravities. We have a specific gravity around money and possessions. We have specific gravities around relationships and sex. We have specific gravities about power and authority issues, and on and on and on. There's all of the chakras have their own particular vibration, and we have specific gravities in each of those areas. And so does that mean that whatever we came into this life with, we're just stuck with? No, that's certainly not the teaching of the great masters to the world. They specifically come in to help us undertake those attitudes, those behaviors, those practices, which will change our specific gravity, that will lighten our consciousness, that will uplift our consciousness, because, as I said, our natural state is to not only break out of the sea of delusion, but to float into the skies of infinity, into union with God. That's our natural state. And so the question then becomes, how do we get there? What do we do in order to change our specific gravity? Because we can't do it just by grim saying, I'm going to do this. I'm going to never make a mistake again. I'm never going to have a wrong thought. I'm never going to feel angry. I'm never going to curse. I'm never going to, whatever it is, we're never going to do. If you have to say, I'm never going to do it, it probably means you're going to do it. Because if you were free from it, it wouldn't be an issue anymore. So that which you're dealing with are your particular issues. And there's just kind of one, it really, really does come down to this simple fact. There's only one thing going on. We either rise or we fall. Reminds me of that old saw. There are only two kinds of people in this world. Those who think there are two kinds of people in this world and those who don't. There are only two directions that matter. The upward expansive direction or the downward contractive direction. And it's not simple because there are universal forces involved in this. Specific gravity has to do with the fact that there's, at least on this planet, in this universe that we're in, there is a universal force of gravity. And that universal force affects us. Now, we can get to be so great in our consciousness that we're beyond these universal forces and we can levitate. But you don't see too many people going around levitating. So if you can't levitate, that means that you're still under the sway of the universal force of gravity. And that universal force is, in this analogy, trying to pull us down. That force is gravity, it's Maya, it's Satan, however you want to name it. It's the force that is trying to contract our consciousness. Now, if you have a ball that's that size filled with air and it's got a certain weight, that ball has a certain specific gravity and it will float somewhere in the sea. You contract that ball and it sinks. You expand the ball and it rises. And it's just that simple. There's just two directions, up or down. And so our battleground is along those two directions. And there's the universal force trying to pull us down, but there's a universal force that is ultimately stronger, which is God's light and joy trying to pull us up. And we float there, and unless something happens to us, we kind of just float at one level. And so God creates also pain. For people of very, very high specific gravity, pain comes from having the single thought that's out of tune with divine will. For those of us at lower specific gravities, pain comes from having thoughts that we know are incorrect. That's basically where our pain comes from. It can come in physical ways, but that's not very important. That's just the effect of past karma coming. The consciousness that we have, when we're rising, we lighten and feel joy and happiness. When we contract, we sink and feel darkness and anger and pain and the negative emotions. So, how do we change our specific gravity? There are really three things that are very important to this. The first and most important of all is that we try to cling to the light or cling to someone who represents that light. For us, it ultimately comes to the guru-disciple relationship. Tomorrow is the anniversary of Swami's meeting of Master, and so in a certain sense, it's all, for all of us, it's our spiritual birthday, because we wouldn't be here at Ananda without that event having taken place. And so when Swami met Master, that connection between the individual soul and God in manifested form, that is the most important upward drawing influence that we will have in our life. Next year, we're going to start a tradition. To back up, we were talking with somebody just 2 days ago about how they first connected with Master, how they got the autobiography of a yogi. And we have asked dozens and dozens of people that question. And always it's a very, very interesting, often marvelous story. In this case, they were in a medical waiting room, and the book was left there on the chair. And she thought, well, maybe I ought to take that. No, it belongs to somebody else. After a while, they had their appointment, came back out. It was still there. And so the receptionist said, well, obviously somebody's left it. Just go ahead and take it. Took it, and that's Master. I mean, he kind of magically shows up. I was at an event where Swami was giving a talk, and a person was wondering whether they should go and see Satya Sai Baba or not. And because they felt that it drawn to him and that he possibly was this person's guru, but was unsure. And Swami was giving a talk. This person was sitting at the back of the room. Swami was giving a talk, and he said, you don't need to worry about meeting your guru. When the time is right, your guru will come to you. At that very moment, a picture of Satya Sai Baba fell off the wall into this person's lap. Now, if you think that was just coincidence, then you've got a few more rounds to go. So that coming to the guru or coming to some teacher in your life is the most important point in your life. Next year, which is what I was starting to say, we're going to start a tradition around the spiritual anniversary, and I think we'll call it Meeting Master. And we'll have a panel, or I'm not sure what form it will take, but people will tell stories of how they came to Master. It'll be an inspiring weekend. I know that you know what I mean, because you've been around and you've heard the stories of people coming to Master. Okay, when we come to the Guru, what is important about that? What did Master ask of Swami? What was the first thing he asked of Swami? He said, I give you my unconditional love. Will you give me yours? That answer is the essence of the spiritual path. Everything else follows from that. God says, I give you my unconditional love. Will you give me yours? Or as we say in the festival, in the purification ceremony, the Master says, open your heart to me, and I will enter and take charge of your life. So we first, before God's influence will work on us, we have to open our heart. Why? Because God never demands. God waits for us to open our heart to him in order for his influence to come in. And so the first thing that we have to work on is keeping our hearts open to God. If we can do that, everything else will fall into place. And there are many, many different ways to do that, staying in tune with the Guru. I won't go into them this morning because we go into them often in the teachings. But reading Master's works, looking at Master's picture, trying to visualize him, chanting to God, offering yourself to God, all the things of your heart, increasing your devotion and increasing your love for God. That is the first and primary and ultimately the only duty that we have. Everything else is secondary. Everything else basically is just marking time. As Lahiri Mahashaya said, the only duty of life is to seek God. Now, there are two other influences that are very, very important. The second in the scriptures, the second most important influence after the guru is what? Satsang or environment. The people, the influences that we open ourselves to will determine to a large extent whether we move in an upward direction, whether our specific gravity gets lighter or heavier. Environment is stronger than willpower, Master said. So the environment that we want to expose our consciousness to is the environment of those people who are more expanded, more joyful, more loving, more compassionate, more kind. So look around. Just look around at the environment that you inhabit. If you tend to try to move into a communication or interchange or friendship or hanging out with those people who are lighter or more sattvic than you, that will automatically influence you to change and expand your consciousness, and your specific gravity will lighten. If you look around for opportunities to find people who are heavier in consciousness, darker, angrier, more self-focused than you are, that will draw you down. Now, why in the world would we ever make a choice like that? It seems like a no-brainer to make the right choice. Well, the no-brainer is because we don't have enough brains to make the right choice. We're drawn by the influence of past actions and past habits. And that downward pulling influence seems to be a relaxed state for us. We don't have to work so hard to hang out with negative people because they don't challenge our consciousness. Swami said being with Master was extremely challenging, because he always treated them as if they were saints and expected them to act that way. And so when you hang out with people, and I'm talking about books you read and movies you watch and television programs, all of that, if you open yourself to influence that is light, it will draw you up. If you open it to dark, downward-pulling influences, it will pull you down. Music is very important in this because it goes beyond it works on the subconscious mind. And so all of these environmental influences are very, very important in lightening your specific gravity. Just be good to go through and kind of check and see where you might make some changes in your environmental influences. And then finally, the last thing that is very influential in our specific gravity is habit, good habits and bad habits. We can't, by and large, make decisions all the time about how to do things and make the right decision, because it's like there's a tug of war at our point of specific gravity. There's a tug of war. There's one element trying to pull us up and another element trying to pull us down. It's all in our consciousness, but it's what we're open to, what our influence is open to. And if you wake up every morning and say, I think I'm going to decide today whether I'll meditate or not. I don't know. It's a pretty even choice. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. Let's see. Which is it today? I guarantee you that you're not going to make it every day. If you set a habit pattern so that your momentum is working with you, then it is very, very, very much easier to make the right choice. So make the right choice once and then reinforce that habit pattern, and it will help you make the right choice again and again and again. And also, if you make the wrong choice, you decide to smoke, you will get a physical addiction to that smoking that will draw you into that habit pattern, whether you like it or not. And so it's very, Master did a lot of teaching around this subject. It's very, very important to choose what you want to do and then to have the strength of will to make the habit patterns that support that. And so these three, the influence of the guru, the influence of God's light and love and joy drawing us up, opening up to that, choosing our environmental influences very carefully, and creating good habits. If we have those, then we will make spiritual progress. We will do what Sri Yukteswar said, the past of all men are dark with many sins, but everything in the future will improve if you make the right spiritual effort now. And these three things constitute making that right spiritual effort.